Yeah, I'd like to thank the organizer for the invitation to this very nice place, although I'm too busy to enjoy any of the nice weather. It's a very exciting conference. And so today I'm going to talk about some recent progress in trying to build a theory for topological order. And I feel very fortunate to work with a very strong group of collaborators. And Zheng Chenggu is currently my postdoc, and he's going to join KITP here. It's very painful for me. Michael Levin is currently a junior fellow in Harvard, and Mason Bakshli is my current student, and Zheng Han Wang is a local. He's in Station Q. And first, a little bit of background. You know, for a long time, we feel that we understand what is the order, what is a phase, because we think all the phase transition and all the order are described by symmetry breaking, and using this order parameter, Kintalana theory and the group theory associated with symmetry, we have a theory for phase and phase transition. But however, after discovery of quantum Hall states, we realized that the symmetry breaking order is not everything. There are new kind of order beyond the symmetry breaking description, because like one-third states and the filling fraction one-fifth states, these two different quantum Hall states have exactly the same symmetry. And but they are different states, so there are no way to use symmetry breaking to distinguish these two states. So if you believe there is a new kind of order, then the next question is that how to describe them. You know, if you believe there is a such thing, then how to describe them. The problem is that this order in the quantum Hall state are really, really new, and none of our language can describe it. So at the beginning, you can only describe those order by what it is not. It's not symmetry breaking order. It cannot be described by order parameter. It cannot be described by language correlation. You know, it's so the main challenge is that we just don't know what to say. However, to make a progress, we do need to find a way to describe this new order in terms of what it is rather than in terms of what it's not. And so one way to do so is to realize that when you put the quantum Hall states, fractional quantum Hall states, on the space with different topology, so there's something very interesting happens, that the ground state degeneracy are different. Say on the sphere, there's no degeneracy. On the torus, maybe there's some few degeneracy. On the genus 2 Riemann surface, there's a different degeneracy. And furthermore, this degeneracy in quantum Hall states actually is topologically stable in a sense you can add whatever you want, like impurity, a periodic potential. It's just still there. They're just robust against any perturbation. So this, so therefore, the ground state degeneracy is a universal property, and it's also dependent on topology of a space. So we can use this feature to characterize quantum Hall states. This new kind of order. So because this is a topological dependent and topologically stable ground state degeneracy, so motivated by this, we name this as a topological order. But so once you realize that there is this robust degenerate ground state, then you say maybe you can do more to find a better way to characterize this new beast. In a sense, we can deform the Hamiltonian. So for example, we can deform the torus in such particular way. As you deform the torus, the degenerate ground state would start to evolve. And there's now a Abelian-Barre phase determined characterized by a unitary matrix to see how this degenerate ground state evolve as we twist the torus. And this unitary matrix actually a form representation of a modular group, because this this transformation of torus is one element of a modular group. And this may form a more complete characterization of a topological order. And actually, there is maybe reason to believe that if in, so different topological order would give us different representation modular group, and there is reason to believe such representation of a modular group may completely characterize topological order. And more recently, we find that there is a topological entanglement entropy, and like Duncan talked about, it's on the spectrum of this entanglement entropy. And this can also be used to describe a topological order. And furthermore, my colleague Levitov and find actually by measuring quantum noise, it's a way to measure entanglement entropy, but not topological part, but just general entanglement entropy. So, so in some sense, maybe this this could be a way to experiment the probe the entanglement. And so in the symmetry breaking order, we know that this our description is very important. This other parameter in the group theory. It is such description of a symmetry breaking order really play a key role for us to setting up a comprehensive theory for the symmetry breaking phase transition, etc. And however, this characterization I just talked about, like degeneracy and the modular group, they are not so convenient. You know, at this moment, we don't know how to use those characterization to build a theory for topological order. You know, suppose if we have a convenient, a good way to characterize topological order, we should be able to using those characterization to build a theory for topological order. But so far, we are not able to do so. So, therefore, this motivate us to try to find maybe a better way, or maybe a more easy to use way to characterize topological order. And hopefully, using this better characterization and description, we can really build a comprehensive theory for topological order. So the bottom line here is that topological order really represent a new kind of ordering, and it deserves to have a comprehensive theory. But so far, we are not quite there yet. So therefore, that's kind of motivation. So in this talk, we'll try to describe two new ways to describe and characterize topological order. The first one is based on Guangzi wave function, and the second one is based on the fixed point Lagrangian. So let's discuss the first one. So basically, we'll try to consider topological order in quantum Hall states. The idea here is that you can see for the filling fraction one state, the Laughlin state, we have this famous wave function, and this wave function is characterized by this nth order zero as we bring two electrons together. The wave function vanishes as a delta z to the nth power. Okay. So then we can generalize this idea. So why bring two electrons? Let's bring a electron together. A can be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. So when we bring those several electrons together, we see how fast wave function vanishes. Then this gives us a number we call SA. That is how fast wave function vanishes at the power of delta z, average separation raised to the SA's power. So we can say SA is order of zero as we bring A electron together. Since A is arbitrary, then we get a sequence. SA is a positive integer, is a sequence integer. Okay. It turns out that this sequence we call the pattern zero. It's exactly what we want. It is a quantitative way to describe topological order in quantum Hall states. You know, topological order is something like a kind of elusive, and you know, it's just a name. And but this SA is a more concrete, more quantitative. So once you have a concrete and a quantitative way to describe order, you should be able to use this quantitative description to quantitatively calculate the quantity of this order. So that is, for example, in the topological order states, we have a filling fraction, Gwang's degeneracy, quasi-particle charge, quasi-particle quantum dimension, and the number of quasi-particle type, and this fusion algebra quasi-particle, all these properties can be quantitatively calculated from this sequence SA. So that is a power of finding a quantitative way to describe the order. Then we can go on to do those calculations. And try to get some flavor, you know, what's going on, you know, how just from a sequence integer, we can do those calculations. So let's consider this sequence in more detail. And first, I'd like to point out that not all the sequence integer correspond to quantum Hall states. Only certain particular pattern of sequence corresponds to real quantum Hall wave function. And after some calculation, we find that in order for the sequence of integer to describe a quantum Hall state, such a sequence should satisfy this inequality, these two inequality, where the A, B, C just integer but arbitrary. So for any integer, they should satisfy this two inequality. There plus a few other conditions which I didn't write down, which are weaker. And so in a sense, so this will lead to some kind of classification. You just find the solution of these two equations. You get a sequence, and that sequence would correspond to a quantum Hall state. You find all the solution, you find all the quantum Hall states. So this may be, so here I'm exaggerating a little bit. And so this program is more or less there, but we are not totally sure if every solution corresponds to quantum Hall states. You know, there's some other detail issues, but the idea is here. And for example, this well-known Pfaffian states is correspond to this solution of a sequence. The S2, S3 is 0, 2, 4, 8. And we also have some new quantum Hall states, which is not quite a Z5 paraffin, but related to that is 0, 2, 6, 10. And there's hundreds or maybe millions, you want to, whatever you want. So there's a number of solutions infinity here. So those are the two example sequence. Okay. It turns out that this pattern zero description of quantum Hall states, surprisingly, is closely related to this one-dimensional picture you heard about in the Donghai's talk and also in the Alexander Stiles talk. So the relation is following. We can consider this difference, SA minus SA minus 1, this difference as an orbital occupied by eighth electron, which I view that way. View this difference as orbital occupied by eighth electron. So then this LA would give you a distribution. Like the first electron occupy this orbital, 10th electron occupy that orbital. Then we can use the occupation number, NL, which tell you in each orbital how many electrons occupied in that orbital to describe the same distribution. And for these two sequences, the NL description is just this. And you already seen this in Donghai's talk and also in Alexander's talk. And this one also describes this sequence. And so those pattern occupation just give you this, it's a way to describe quantum Hall state. And from here, you can immediately read off the filling fraction. Here's a two orbital, two electron filling fraction one. Here's the eight orbital, five electron filling fraction five over eight. And so that's kind of give some flavor that if you know the sequence, you know the pattern, this quantitative description topology order, you can calculate the physical measurable quantities. And so how about the quasi-party? We can apply this this pattern zero method, try to describe quasi-particles. But again, we have similar difficulties. We have to have a quantitative way to describe a quasi-particle, rather than just give a name, the quasi-particle A, quasi-particle B. And it turns out that we can also use this sequence of pattern zero to quantitatively characterize quasi-particle. The idea is very simple. Suppose we have a wave function with a quasi-particle here. Then we bring A electron to the quasi-particle and to see how fast the wave function vanishes. Then you get a pattern zero, a sequence pattern zero, which we call this S gamma A. So gamma really represents the quasi-particle. This A is how many electrons we bring to the quasi-particle. This S gamma A means the power order of zero as we bring A electron to this quasi-particle. So then again, not all the sequences are possible. Only certain particular S gamma A are possible, are consistent, and which correspond to existing quasi-particle. And using a similar mathematics, we find the condition for this quasi-particle sequence is given by this very similar formula. We simply replace the condition we have before for ground state sequence by replacing some of SA by S gamma A. Then we get this condition for quasi-particle. And here, what I emphasize that in this condition, we have information for ground state encoded in this SB. You know, that's ground state sequence, and these two are ground state sequence. And this also ground sequence. And we also have a quasi-particle sequence, which is here. So therefore, the solution of these two equations depend on the ground state sequence, which characterizes topological order in the ground state. For different ground state, we'd get a different solution for quasi-particle sequence. It turns out that all the solution of this sequence give us correspond to different quasi particles. Different solutions give you different quasi particles. So that's how we find out how many different quasi particle type and etc. Yes. That's a good question. And here, what I'm looking for is so-called zero energy states. You know, So in this, those details I can skip. You know, we have here. We assume we have this Hodan pseudo potential wave function of Hamiltonian, where the zero energy sector of this idealized Hamiltonian is our ground state. And then when you try to insert a quasi particle, we really try to find a way that our modification wave function only increase order of zero, never decrease. But how many different ways to increase order of zero? That's essentially what I described here. Ground state is similar, yeah. So basically, it's a Hamiltonian imposed on the condition of this zero energy state. The order zero has to be certain things. When you create a quasi particle, we do that way. So strictly speaking, there are some quasi particle. Maybe strictly speaking, these are all quasi holes. I mean, quasi particle have energy is not there. But as topological property, the quasi particle quasi alone differ by electron. Here we don't care too much. So that is kind of a idea here. So here just some example that these two sequences, this SA describe ground state, and S gamma A describe quasi particle. They both are quantitative way to describe ground state and the quasi particle. And starting from here, we can calculate the property of a quasi particle, like a fractional charge, and a fusion algebra, and et cetera. But unfortunately, at the moment, we still don't know how to calculate fractional statistics from this. But I think it can be done, but it's just more work. But the bottom line here is that what we here try to do is to find a quantitative and concrete way to describe topological order. And hopefully, from this quantitative description, we can really build a theory. Yes? No. So essentially, this theory is closely related to the edge theory. So everything, okay. The new thing from here is that from this classification, there are new quantum Hall states. Actually, there are some SA sequence is not known before, and we have some sequence we don't even know which conformal field theory produced that. Yeah, that's right. So there do have a sequence is which not Parafermian and not some non-conformal theory, but maybe it's some conformal theory just we didn't identify yet. Yes. Yes, and just the wave function is it's kind of like but it's much more complicated. What essentially what I try to say is that using this sequence integer is a kind of way to encode wave function. If I really try to write them down as a polynomial, it's not messy. But maybe you don't need to write down polynomial explicitly, but using this sequence integer, you can encode the universal topological information. That's what we try to do here. Now let's switch gear. So we just described this using the wave function to describe topological order. So now let's try to say maybe we can use the Lagrangian, or maybe for the condensed matter theory it's a Hamiltonian to describe topological order. Now that reminds me, when I first come to MIT, ITP as a postdoc, I just switched from the high energy to condensed matter. I have to remember to high-energy, when I talk to high-energy physics, I should say Lagrangian. When I talk to condensed matter physics, I should say Hamiltonian. So here I cross this boundary a little bit. So if I want to use a Hamiltonian to crack a space, we have a difficulty, actually. Because, for example, the Hamiltonian contains coupling constant. For the different value of a coupling constant, we may in a different phase. But the Lagrangian with different coupling constants, it all looks similar. You know, it's hard to see why this g equal to 1 is one phase, g equal to 3 half is another phase. You know, so there's difficulty using this Lagrangian to describe phase. But however, here we have a renormalization group idea. If you do the renormalization group, then this the Hamiltonian or Lagrangian will change under renormalization group transformation. And when you do many transformations, we find that they will flow to some fixed point. So therefore, we can use a fixed point Lagrangian or Hamiltonian to describe a phase. So that is the idea. So therefore, all the different phases can be described by fixed point, including topological phase. Certainly, people use this routinely to describe symmetry breaking phase, but maybe topological phase should be able to describe in a similar fashion. Yes? Okay, let me put it this way. I try to talk about something which I can program in a computer. In a sense, what that really means is I want to put a cutoff to something so that when I put in cutoff, then it can at least simulate the system quantitatively. Then without that, sometimes I feel I don't know what I'm talking about. So essentially, it's I think what you this issue is a little bit similar to the question no to this one. That is suppose there are some sequence is if you look at it, it's self consistent, but then there's the issue whether self consistent sequence guarantee to have a particular wave function to support it. And even here, we are not totally sure. You know, that's why I say this theory is not totally complete. You know, we don't have a proof that the sequence such that this equation have actual polynomial supporting this. But at least for the case we know, we can find the polynomial to produce sequence. But we don't have a proof. Maybe someone find some sequence satisfy this condition, that looks reasonable. But then there's no wave function to correspond that. That's probably similar to that. I mean, when you have a low energy description of a theory, you may find a certain self-consistent description define a cutoff concrete theory. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's possible. And however, there's a difficulty to use this renormalization group idea to describe a topological phase. The reason is that we know that for the bosonic system, like a quantum spin system, if the quantum spin system is in topologic phase, it's a low-energy effective action, or effective Lagrangian, or maybe a fixed-point Lagrangian, can be very rich. It can be gauge theory, or can be transformation theory, or can be QED with a fermion, emerging fermion, or can even be a gravity with a gapless graviton. So there's a problem, you know. If you do this a standard renormalization approach, the renormalization group flow of a bosonic Lagrangian with a bosonic scalar field, it's hard to imagine that can produce a fixed point Lagrangian with a gauge field or even anti-commuting Grassmannian field. So that seems using this renormalization group idea to study fixed point and to study topological phase, it's like it's done to work. But however, here I want to turn the table around. We know that such fixed point theory indeed exists for bosonic system. The fact that we are not able to use a renormalization group to study such a fixed point is not because, it's because our formulation for RG is too limited. we should generalize our formulation for the normalization group so that we will be able to produce this new class of fixed point. And so here I'll describe one of the generalization which is based on the tensor network. The idea is rather simple at this stage, is that we can write down any passing integral or passing function in terms of tensor network, in terms of tensor trace over a tensor network. But let me explain what is a tensor trace of a tensor network. So the tensor here is a T with a rank 4, so we have 4 index, and so represented graphically by these 4 legs for each tensor. Okay. A tensor trace means that we put this tensor into this graph such that if these two tensors, the leg joins, means these two tensors would have same, the index would take same value on this leg and sum them over. So that really means that. So these two tensors on this link, the index have same value and this index will be summed over. Okay. Then this, so how to relate this, it's like a trace of a matrix contraction. It's a trace of a matrix can also be written this way. So how this relate to the passing integral? The relation is following. We can view the value of index on each link as a discretized version of the phi, the value of a field. We discretize the value of field. Then you can see each link have a position, and this position is a discretized version of a space and time. So we'll sum over all possible index on all different links, not like doing the passing integral, but in some discretized version. So that's some discretization of passing integral, both in space-time and also in the value of a field. That's it. Yeah, this transfer the link. We transfer the link is a space-time point. Yeah. That's encoded the Lagrangian. So this tensor encode the Lagrangian. When you choose different tensor, it's like you're choosing different Lagrangian here. Yeah, that's right. So you can encode this four-border interaction, you know, easily here. Yeah, but essentially, this is just some very general mathematics. I believe any Lagrangian can be expressed this way, as long as you invent complicated enough tensor, you can just encode that way. Yeah, I would say any action of this form. Yes. Yes. You can have a more because this I didn't specify the dimension of index. Suppose you have a system, you only have a physical field described. So for example, you have a spin 1/2 system. You say, oh, maybe this index should be just 1, 2, but you are free to add more, 3 and 4, 5 and 6. You can use this actual index to go through this corner and couple to this. So although this looks like we don't have nearest neighbor coupling, but by enlarging the dimension index, you can encode any interaction beyond the nearest neighbor. Yeah, by enlarging this space. Okay. So that is the program. So to calculate the passing integral, we simply need to calculate the tensor trace. And so if we can calculate the tensor trace, we can solve anything, and hopefully including the financial crisis we are facing. But unfortunately, according to the principle for no free lunch, calculating the tensor trace is NP hard problem. Yeah, there's a proof. Actually, it's a sharp P hard. It's even harder than NP hard. But I don't know the distinction between NP hard and sharp P hard. But Levine and Knave discover principle of free lousy lunch. That is a if you are willing to accept some errors, then the calculating tensor trace is a polynomial complexity. Yeah. So the idea is actually very similar to this block spin renormalization group idea, and we kind of just do some kind of block speed and a cross-graining calculation, and so that you get a flow of a coupling constant. But here is that instead of thinking about the flow of a coupling constant, one's thinking about the flow of a whole tensor structure. So that's basically just a, it's a little bit like this a coupling function normalization group. It's not just coupling constant, but it's a function. But here is a tensor, whole tensor structure flowing. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so actually, this is the one thing one can pursue. You know, there's such a big program in lattice gauge calculation, and this may represent a new way to do a lattice gauge calculation. Yeah, so every Hamiltonian can do that. There's a standard way. This was a chart. there's a way to do that. And so the Lavin and Naef's idea is that we write this rank 4 tensor as a contraction of two rank 3 tensors. So that's one basic move. So then using this basic move, we can deform this tensor network into this form. And then we contract this 4 rank 3 tensor to go back to the single rank 4 tensor. There the number of tensor is reduced by half. And then we get a new tensor, so we get a flow from T to T prime, that's it. And however, this implementation have a small problem, not a big one, a very small problem. And that is the fixed point tensor is not isolated. So in a sense, if you modify the coupling a little bit, the fixed point tensor would change a little bit. So that really means not every local fluctuation are integrated out. So there's a certain local entanglement still survive this renormalization procedure. And this is actually the key. And we believe that the topology order is actually a pattern for long-range entanglement. And that's what topology really is. But certainly, we don't know what it really is, long-range entanglement. So this is like a null statement. But however, the tensor calculation really try to integrate out the short-range entanglement and keep long-range entanglement intact. And that's how this fixed point tensor, we hope, may characterize the long-range entanglement after we integrate all the short-range entanglement. So that's maybe fixed point tensor is a natural way to describe topological order. So that's kind of an idea here, although it's not very concrete at the moment. So with the Zheng Chen, we find improvement of this result. We actually add another procedure we call the tensor entanglement filtering procedure. The idea is that we start with this rank 4 tensor here, it's a 4 rank 3 tensor here. And we try to replace this 4 rank 3 tensor by simpler rank 3 tensor such that keep this contracted rank 4 tensor the same. By simplify really means that we try to reduce the dimension index on this link. So this solid line have a higher dimension, the dashed line have a lower dimension. So there's some program, you can write some code to do that. And then we can, essentially, then we can, from this tensor network, we can go to another tensor network where we reduce the dimension here with some, this step filter out some local entanglement. And after doing that, we find the fixed point tensor became isolated. So it means all the local entanglement is filtered out. And so here's some result. We just apply this method to the simplest model. The transverse not just 2D static Ising model, and so we calculated the partition function, and it's hard to see the phase transition, but you can calculate the second order derivative of partition function, which is still pretty smooth, and you can see the phase transition. The vertical line is the exact results, and so the fixed point tensor in one phase is just a dimension one tensor, which is kind of trivial, only. In high temperature phase, this. In the low temperature phase, only T111 and T222 are 1. Everything else is 0. So that's a low temperature phase. And actually, this really demonstrates one thing very general. You know, this fixed point tensor actually is a direct sum of this trivial fixed point tensor. So that represents the symmetry breaking. So if you find the fixed point tensor is a direct sum of something, that means you are finding symmetry breaking phase. So that's how the symmetry breaking phase is realized in this tensor RG picture. And to plot how the fixed point tensor changes as we change the temperature, and so this is there's some tensor contraction. This x1 is this tensor contraction divided by this tensor contraction square. So you can see there's a step, so that's phase transition. And from the fixed point tensor, we can also calculate the central charge, which basically is the specific heat. In the ordered phase or disordered phase, the central charge equals zero, at transition is non-zero, and we can see this. And we can also calculate other scaling property at transition. And this tower calculation gives us this result. And the lower line is the exact result. So we can get three or four digit of accuracy with a 10-hour calculation on desktop. H is the scaling dimension. This is like 1/8 is a disorder operator in the icing model. And we can also apply this method to this two quantum spin one model. And this is we try to study the Houdin phase, which is a wonderful topological phase. And so this is the phase diagram we get. And this graph is these two graphs really it's central charge. So we can see the phase transition more clearly by plotting central charge. The line where central charge is non-zero is a phase transition. And so we have a Houdin phase and a trivial phase. And those transitions are this central charge 1/2 critical line. And they join to the central charge equal to 1 transition. And this transition from the Z2 phase to another Z2 phase is a Landau, beyond the Landau paradigm continuous phase transition, because these two symmetry breaking are incompatible, but we still see a continuous phase transition. And the transition from Houdin phase and the trivial phase also beyond Landau paradigm phase transition, we see a continuous phase transition without changing any symmetry. The critical point is C equal to 1 critical point. So this really demonstrates that this fixed point tensor structure allow us to see a phase transition beyond the symmetry breaking paradigm. Yeah. And so maybe I'll skip this. So actually we know that we can also find out the fixed point tensor in the Houdin phase. And after I see the fixed point tensor, I feel finally understand what is the Houdin phase. But maybe let's skip that. And so the point is that here we describe two way to describe characterized topology order. One is using wave function, another using fixed point tensor. And the main idea here is that we hope if you really find a good and convenient way to characterize topology order, we can really build a theory for topology order. But here I want to stress that these two wave of characterization is just two pieces of puzzle in a much richer structure. And so I want to emphasize that in the symmetry breaking order, the group theory is a mathematical foundation for the symmetry breaking order. But for the topology order, since the tensor category would play a role of group theory. So unfortunately, maybe we have to learn tensor category theory, or maybe fortunately. Here. So the latent gain theory is here. So another thing I want to really say is that the topology order really is a Langevin entanglement. And this efficient calculation based on tensor network is really like entanglement engineering. We try to manage entanglement and try to find efficient numerical method. And so if I'm optimistic, if you find a way to manage entanglement, if I'm optimistic, we probably next few years we can have an algorithm in any dimension for any strongly correlated system, and with a 1% accuracy. Yeah. Okay. I'll stop here.
I'm confused about something basic. In the fractional quantum Hall effect, or in the quantum Hall effect generally, you can introduce something like a long range, off diagonal long range
yes,
orders.
So that's correct. And the operator is non-local.
Right.
So you can have a non-local operator with a non-local correlation, then it's become tricky, For any system, even band insulator, you can introduce non-local operator to have a long-range correlation with non-local operator. That's not a surprise. So, So using non-local operator, using long-range correlation of non-local operator to characterize a phase is not well studied, let me put it this way. Even Bunn insulator have a long-range correlation if you're willing to introduce non-local operator. Yeah. So we don't know whether this using this long-range correlation of non-local operator describe quantum Hall state, capture the essence of quantum Hall state now. I personally tried to take a position that didn't capture the essence of quantum Hall states, and so one should not go in that direction.
I wanted to ask about your pattern of zeros conditions. You wrote down two conditions, and the first one was a convexity condition for the S function, and the second one was a third order convexity condition.
Yes.
So I was expecting that you'd have them all.
No, actually, we tried actually. We couldn't derive the other one, but actually, since you are looking for more conditions, so some, you know, I just added the higher one in my program. They don't produce new results.
So those other
these two is enough. You know,
they're enough, but the other conditions would be there logically for the same arguments that produced the first two.
That I don't know. If I put in other conditions by hand, they don't produce additional constraints.
I see.
That's a numerical. We check that. Yeah, we're looking for more conditions. And yeah.
I have a question again to this pattern of zeros classification. We all have learned that when we perturb away from the Laughlin point, let's say that's characterized by the pseudopotentials that lead to it being the ground state. If we perturb that, we remain in the same topological phase up to some boundary. And the pattern of zeros itself seems to be an idealized way of characterizing that state that's no longer apparent in the state that we move to.
Yeah. So that's why the second part of the talk. So pattern zero corresponds to the fixed point tensor. It's already idealized. And when you have a generic, if you start with a generic system, you cannot use that. So in a sense, the pattern zero only describes the fixed point structure for quantum Hall states. To really have a full story, we need to develop something which allows things to flow to this idealized version. Then we believe this fixed point of this flow will be described by pattern zero. But for the quantum Hall states, that part is yet to come. We don't know how to do that at the moment. And but the second part really is that we can start with a non-universal system and let it flow to obtain the phase.
So the community that studies strongly correlated electron systems with numerical methods, building on DMRG, have also pursued tensor structures. There's states called PEP states introduced by Sirac and Verstraete.
Yes.
Could you comment on the relation of what?
Okay. Yeah. This is very good question. And so, like this phase diagram, you can obtain from DMRG easily, no problem. And also this algorithm based on tensor network is not more efficient than DMRG. Actually, they are about equally efficient. So from the computation complexity point of view, it's kind of equivalent. The main difference is that in DMRG, when you do 1 plus 1D system, the coarse graining in the DMRG is asymmetric. You have a special time direction. And so it's kind of you just do coarse graining in one direction, kind of in one direction, and not the other direction. So the information of dimensionality may be lost. And so the cross-graining we discussed here, really the isotropic in the space-time. And this have a strong influence on the fixed-point tensor. Because if you do DMRG, the fixed-point tensor are intrinsically all one-dimensional fixed-point tensor, which correspond to the one-dimensional topological order. And we know the topological order in different dimensions are very different, have very different structure. And then for those topological order which depend on dimensionality of space, I think you can be only reflect if you do this isotropic cross-graining, and then the fixed-point tensor for this isotropic cross-graining can carry information of a topological order. No, but when you it's too many. But when they do this cross screening, they reduce that into one dimension. No, perhaps is, but there's a, that's the implementation. So the starting point is same, is tensor network. What you, how to reduce it is a, is there's many many different way to do this cross screening reduction. I think the Westrad and Sark's way is a little bit more one dimensional. They do this column by column. And this is designed to be more symmetric. And when you do the column by column, actually you're looking for the single eigenvalue with a single largest eigenvalue, which dominates everything. And that is wrong, because that means topology order. And when you do this cross-screening, actually this is closely to this entanglement spectrum Duncan talked about. The topological phase for the Hodan phase is characterized by degeneracy of the singular value. And such energy is stable only when you do the 2D cross screening. And so the topological order is maintained. That's fixed point tensor is a better.
Should you go first? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Actually, the question I wanted to ask you. It was on the previous transparency, and in answer to, I saw that you had a four-point vertex. No, it's the other one in answer to the previous question. I don't really understand what filtering local entanglements mean, but up there you have a four-point vertex, which you exploded into two three-point vertices.
That's right. Right. Yes.
So this is something that people also try to do in field theory, because, for example, Yang-Mills theory has this very ugly feature that it has a three-point vertex and also a four-point.
I see.
So could people try to rewrite the four-point in terms of two three-points? So, and gravity even worse, right? There are many, many more points. So are you saying that this is a general procedure one could follow somehow in field theory also?
I'm a little confused. In which context?
This procedure, this blue arrow.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. It's at this level, this is just a trick. You don't have to do this, but this is one way to achieve, to deform the tensor network and to do this cross screening. Mm-hmm. But you can choose to do other deformation, other decomposition. The main thing is that hopefully, you know, after this contraction, this link, you reproduce this rank 4 tensor. Then that's where your accuracy was guaranteed. And that's also the error where you make error, because we have to using some simpler rank 3 tensor, so we don't fully reproduce the rank 4 tensor. So there's truncation error there.
Oh, okay, so this is completely different from what I was thinking, which is replacing the getting rid of the 4-point vertex.
Exactly, getting rid of 4-point. So that then we can do next step, try to deform the tensor network. It's just a trick, deform tensor network. Actually, there's a lot of room here, and this is one way to do so. And we don't know whether this is the most efficient way or best way to do so. Maybe there's some other way you get less truncation error. So basically, it's an entanglement engineer. But we don't understand what is entanglement. We don't know which way you can have a least truncation error. So there's a lot of room. Yeah.
Xiaogang, yeah. In your first paper on patterns of zeros, I think you comment that hierarchy states are still a little bit of a problem.
That's right.
So the Backholz and collaborators, they have proposed thin cylinder patterns for general hierarchy states. Can you take these patterns and convert them into patterns of zeros and check if they would satisfy your consistency constraints?
Okay. It's a very, very good question. And the pattern zero formulation I described actually is not totally general, although I make it sound very general. But actually, it's only for the so-called one-component quantum power states. So therefore, the two-fifth states is not even there. But however, five-fifths states there. Five-fifths is somehow one component. But two-fifths hierarchy states, two-component states not there. But however, the generalization is very straightforward. It's actually like what you did for the spin 1/2. You need that's also like Houdin Riesz state, it's a two-component state. So actually, the student Mason, he's kind of working on that. He's trying to have this two-component generalization or three-component generalization. So then after you do this after multi-component, then this hierarchy state should be there. And we're getting somewhere, but we're still collecting results. So I don't know. The final picture is not emerged yet. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's hopefully in next few months we can get something.
Jürgen, I apologize for asking two questions, but you did give two talks. So we're the audience, and you are going back and forth. But I want to ask a final thing about this tensor network talk. So you explained you could start with the Lagrangian and represent its physics essentially in a tensor network.
Yes.
And then you told us about renormalizing, according to your scheme, the tensor network. But of course, we could start with the Lagrangian and renormalize it in the usual field theoretic sense.
Yes.
And I'm asking, does the diagram commute? Suppose you take the fixed point Lagrangian and then you turn it into a tensor network. Will it be the same thing as renormalizing as finding the original tensor network of the Lagrangian and then renormalizing that?
I think what happened in the field theory is that the field theory assuming some ansatz. In a sense, in the field theory, people parameterize Lagrangian in terms of coupling constant.
Right.
So that means when you're using tensor to represent that Lagrangian, the tensor is parameterized by the coupling constant. And when you get this tensor flow, you insist on T prime to be expressed by T at a different coupling constant. So essentially, the flow in the tensor space is tensor space is bigger. But in the field theory, you project back. You make some error and project back into the tensor in a family which you can label by this coupling constant. So therefore, you can convert a tensor flow as a flow in a coupling constant space. I think that's what limits the field theory. And if you don't project back to the coupling constant space, you just do in a tensor space. Basically, you treat every element of a tensor as a coupling constant. Then that will be the same. However, this next part I'm not so sure is that the cutoff is very important here. Because the cutoff here is intrinsic. And some innocent tensor actually can represent topological phase. And this is possible with the cutoff. So I don't know without cutoff, when you write down the field theory in the continuum version, seems it's hard to get the framing out of a boson. But with a cutoff, it's a piece of cake. Yeah. Thank you.